They go. I mean, anything that's got CGI in it, you know, it was really interesting. They even go back and fix stuff.
They go back and fix stuff?
Yeah. So, like, arguably the worst scene, like the scene that gets referenced the most for having the worst CGI is the second Mummy movie, The Scorpion King, with The Rock. And at the very end, the Scorpion King comes out and it's The Rock, and he's half, it's like a Minotaur, but he's a scorpion. So he's half rock, half scorpion.
Okay.
But it's just this CGI abomination. It just looks atrociously bad. So they take the scene and they say they're going to take a day. And the team goes and they split up and they all handle a different facet of the scene. And then they make it better.
Did they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They ended up deep fake. They did a deep fake of The Rock to replace the ridiculous CGI sculpted head.
Weird.
Of it, yeah.
Talking about The Rock, like...
Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne Johnson. Okay, yeah. I wasn't sure if you were referencing, like, an actual Rock.
No. Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It was really cool.
I did start recording the post show. I did start halfway through your story, so I wasn't gonna... Just hop right into the middle there. It's probably not going to make sense, but it's funny anyway.
Yeah, no, I was talking about this YouTube channel. It's called the Collider Crew. And they... actually, I can find it right here. Is that what it was? Where'd they go? Yeah, so these guys critique. They have a bunch of videos. They're really interesting stuff. I mean, it's a lot of it's movie-based because they're digital effect artists. Some of it isn't, though. But they do, and I guess they do actually do a series, like its own series. So, like an action series with like actors and stuff. And
cool.
they do the digital effects for it. Corridor. Corridor Crew is what they're called. And here, I sent you a link.
Thank you.
Visual effects artists react to Marvel bad and great CGI. I can send it to your
No, it's fine. I can just Google it. It's fine. Yes. Text it to me even though I'm on a work computer. It's fine.
Too bad.
I'm Googling it. It's fine.
I already sent it to you. I was already emailed.
Stop. I don't want more emails.
I sent it without a thing in it.
I already have so many emails.
But it's interesting. They did a whole bit on why all the guns in movies are wrong.
Oh, yeah. They're terrible.
So they do a whole segment on how they get the guns in movies wrong. And one of the things they pointed out, because in the series that they have, this action series, there's a lot of shooting going on. And they talk about how you'll get hit before you hear the gunshot. And it was interesting because watching Saving Private Ryan again the other day, in Saving Private Ryan, when, spoiler alert, Vin Diesel's character gets shot, the sniper who is with the U.S. troops, can't remember the guy's name. Anyway, he makes a comment. He goes, he went down well before I heard the shot. The guy's got to be at a really good, at a far distance. And I was like, oh, Saving Private Ryan. Ryan Steven Spielberg got that right. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting. So the videos are good. They're good to wipe out on. They're good just YouTube. Need 15 minutes just to wipe out on something. These three
I do
dudes.
That with poker videos.
Yeah.
That's my YouTube wipeout of choice. Poker hand analyzation.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I could understand that.
It's enjoyable, but trying to like explain it to somebody else who doesn't play poker.
Yeah, it's
absolute waste of time.
Play Portuguese. Yeah, might as well be doing something else.
No.
Hi.
Hey.
What's up?
Nothing. Tired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of I'm talking Ilhan Omar. I'll make you tired.
I found that. Or I got that video up. Should I play it?
Oh, you can play the beginning of it if you want.
Look at that neck. Dude, look at that neck snap. Ah! Let's just have Robert Downey Jr. just do this and like try to make stuff stick to him.
You should watch this.
Let's say I'm supervising. Here's what stands out to me.
Send it to me.
We should have our diplomas. Where's my VFX diploma?
Hi, welcome to VFX Artists React to Marvel's bad and good CGI. Now, we've seen other people do their own versions of React videos online with different professionals working in different kinds of fields. We wanted to do one for ourselves as visual effects artists and filmmakers here on YouTube. Here at Corridor, we're going to react to how Marvel has done their crazy, crazy CGI in their films.
It's called just throw money at the problem.
So you can stop it here because a lot of it's visual. This one's really interesting, though, Drew, because they tear down. They don't tear down, but they break down the final fight sequence in Black Panther in this one.
Okay.
And it's really, really fascinating when they get into these guys know their stuff. It's just, yeah, it's good stuff. I like it.
With all the vibranium?
Yes.
Which isn't real.
Right. Okay. Right. All that. Exactly.
I would think that when you, because for me, when I watch, as a horse person, when I watch movies that involve horses, it's like painful because usually it's just so incorrect. Just with the way that they talk about horses, the way that they work with horses, things like that. Just like annoying to watch. And just the way that equestrians are depicted in general. There's your exceptions. There's some movies and TV shows that do it right. And you can tell they have like a consultant there that is telling them like what's right and what's wrong and whatever. And that's really nice. But for the most part, a lot of times when horses are in films, it's just annoying to watch. And so I can only imagine with CGI being so prominent these days, when you actually know all of the stuff that goes behind it.
That's what comes out in here.
Yeah, it must just ruin it for them.
Well, I imagine it's like that. Isn't it like that with poker in the movies?
Well,
don't they get it wrong?
Say. You know, they get guns wrong. They get horses wrong. They get poker wrong. They get so many things wrong. Yet so much of how we perceive the world is informed by film. You know, because your brain doesn't necessarily distinguish between something you're watching on a screen or something that's happening in real life right in front of you.
Right.
So, you know, movies and TV really inform a lot of our assumptions and the way we perceive the world and the way we expect it to operate. Yet it's all bogus. It's all made up. It's all fake. And they get things wrong. I think no wonder our society's so screwed up. Everybody's going into their adulthood with all of these expectations of how the world's supposed to work, and none of it works the way you expect it to.
My favorite, it was poker in Casino Royale, right? I love that sequence, but how accurate is that whole thing? Oh, is it? Okay.
That would never, ever.
Don't tell me that. I love the sequence.
It's still a good scene.
Yeah, no, that whole thing is great.
It's still a very good scene. There's nothing wrong with the scene, but that situation would never, ever, ever, ever happen in a real poker game. But that doesn't make it a bad scene.
Sure.
It's fine.
It's the same thing with Days of Thunder. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Like, I love watching Days of Thunder, but the racing in that is ridiculous. The whole end sequence when Cole Trickle spins out and then he gets his confidence back. I'm putting the hammer down. And he's just passing cars left and right. Like, that's impossible. That would never, ever happen in a real race.
You've watched real boxing before, haven't you?
Yeah, right.
You've watched boxing.
Right.
Have you ever seen a boxing match that looks anything like anything from the Rocky movies?
No.
Where people are just waylaying each other. Rocky's getting hit with, you know, hook after hook after hook after hook, square in the face, and the referee's not stopping it or anything. Like, there's nothing remotely realistic about boxing or racing or anything that goes on in these films. It's weird to me that we just continue to allow for all this dramatic license when we know better.
Well, because life is boring. You know, like, the real life stuff isn't.
Right.
Not all of it. You know what I'm saying, though. Yes. It just doesn't translate to what we perceive as cinema. Actually, this may or may not be true, but it just popped into my head. It makes me wonder if that's why the sort of, you go back to your 60s, 50s, and 40s cinema was paced so much slower and uninteresting because it was actually more in relation to reality. Like, I wonder if the filmmaking, and you know, I could wipe out on this, but you could kind of track it to Jaws and Star Wars, because they ended up changing the game. If you look at the box office numbers for highest grossing films from the beginning of cinema up until right around the mid 70s and Jaws and Star Wars, mm-hmm. After those movies, it all changed. Like, before that, the top grossing films were like Kramer versus Kramer.
Right.
You know, and you go back to like Gone with the Wind or the sweeping sort of slow moving epic or your dramas or, you know.
Ben-Hur.
You know, what's that?
Ben-Hur.
Ben-Hur, you know. And then you go after that, it's just, inundated with with blockbusters. And I think that's where the Oscars have, we're never really going off on a tangent, but that's where the Oscars misstep. Because the Oscars kept treating the film industry and the films that they were watching like they were prior to the arrival of the massive blockbusting movies. And now they're finally sort of, oh, yeah, everybody's cinemas are really only going to exist if we have Marvel Cinematic movies and Star Wars and Star Wars films. So I guess we should probably start paying attention to them, you know? Well, I remember I was watching a military drama when Wing Commander that my dad made us watch with Jimmy Stewart when he visited over the holidays. And I enjoyed watching it sort of like as a nostalgic piece, but it was, I mean, it was a slow as all get out movie, you know, and just, it was just a pace all sort of just trotted along and conversations were all just sort of, you know, this conversation was more exciting than any conversation that took place in that movie, for crying out loud. But yeah, you can make a list of the things, the movies. Oh, I remember riding BMX bikes when Rad came out.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, oh, it's a BMX bike racing movie. Awesome. What? That's not how that worked. That's not what happens.
I was in high school when Vision Quest came out, and I was on the wrestling team at high school. And I loved wrestling. It was my favorite sport. So I was super excited that, oh, there's a movie that, you know, was going to deal with, like, high school wrestling. And then, yeah, no matches that happened like the ones they did, you know. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Even
no Linda Florentino or whatever her name was.
Heartland,
I could only wish.
Heartland is my favorite TV show because it's the most accurate depiction of anything, any kind of like film or TV show or anything like that that has to do with horses. That just the way that they depict just how the horses behave and how you train them and interact with them and everything is just very, very accurate. But even in that, I mean, they still will add like a lot of sound effects of like horses making sounds and whinnying and whatever. Cause generally they're actually really quiet unless something's wrong, but they like add a bunch of just sounds all the time of horses just whinnying all the time so that you feel like, I guess they're emoting more, I guess.
Like, right.
Like they're like showing their pleasure and distress on a minute by minute basis.
Yeah. They don't talk all the time.
No. If I had a horse that talked all the time, I would sell it. Cause that'd be annoying.
When I saw Secret Life of Pets yesterday, it was funny. They did a cheat because there's like three different storylines running. That movie's actually pretty funny. I really enjoyed that. But there's three different storylines running, and one of them involves the Snowball, the bunny, turns into a superhero and goes with Tiffany Haddish-voiced little cute little dog to go rescue this young white tiger from the zoo who's being mistreated, right? Totally cute. The tiger was just adorable. But they didn't give the tiger a voice. So the way they got around it was they didn't because it was way cuter without him having a voice. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh, he's a wild tiger, so he hasn't learned to speak.
Oh.
And so, but I was like, okay, that's really cute because the tiger is super funny and really cool to watch. But yeah, you totally cheated because you knew it was just way cuter to have this big-eyed, blue-eyed white tiger not having a voice. Yeah, it was pretty funny.
No, I really want to watch it.
Yeah,
I heard the first one was really funny.
Yeah, I heard really good things about it.
I liked this one a lot more because the first one takes a turn. Like, the concept in the trailer for the first one was great. Like, what do the animals do when you're not home? Well, it turns into this adventure where they leave their apartment building and they end up with this, like, group of, like, this mafia of animals in the gutter. And they're all – and so it just – I know it's a cartoon and it's a kid's movie and all that. But I was like, no, the concept of just what would they do on their own time is funny on its own.
That's good enough.
This movie did that. This movie was all about them being – they dumbed the animals down even though they were talking and really zeroed in on their behavior when people aren't watching. And that part of it was hysterical.
Right up my alley.
Yeah. And the one – there's a – I was – this is the part where Kyle told me to stop because I was laughing too hard. But there's the big fat cat. I think her name's Chloe. Max, the protagonist dog, shows up to Chloe because he's trying to find Gidget. And the cat's playing with, you know, the doorstop that has the little spring on it?
Yeah.
So Max walks up.
Wow.
And the cat's just staring at his, and he's, like, talking to her. And finally she looks up. Oh, hey, Max. And she's staring at him. And it was so damn funny. Oh, I was crying. And there's a whole bit where Gidget's this little white, like, poodle dog, and Chloe has to teach Gidget how to be a cat. it was really good. Yeah. Super cute too. There's a scene where there's an old dog who it was in the first movie, and you arrive in his apartment and he has all these puppies. And so he's training the puppies. So he lines the puppies up like they're military. And he's like, you know the mantra? Be as cute, you know, it was something like, you know, be as cute as we can be to get anything that we want. And he's like, yeah, that's right. I give it a thumbs up. Yeah.
I have to watch both. I haven't seen the first one or the second one, but they sound so good.
Yeah, you won't be lost if you see the second one without the first one. So
you don't think I need the first one?
No.
And you think the second one's better?
Yes. I do. All right. Should we promo this up?
I suppose.
Yeah, let's do that.
What's the matter, Drew?
I'm tired.
You sound troubled.
You say you do.
I feel like I'm over this cold, but I don't know.
It's lingering.
I feel more exhausted than I should.
No, that's what happens when you talk Ilhan Omar. By the way, she is all over Twitter right now.
Really?
There's so many people tweeting about Ilhan Omar.
I thought you meant like she was tweeting all over the place.
Oh, no, she tweeted some Maya Angelou quote, and people are going after her. It's really funny. I got to see if I can... Yeah, like I popped up, and there were like four from like four different outlets people were talking Ilhan.
Well, look, I think it's going to come out that she definitively has committed immigration fraud and that she definitively committed tax fraud. And then the question is going to be, what do they do?
Yeah.
You know,
I'm with you.
If that comes out and it's like definitive and it's a fact, she can't stay in her position, can she?
Yeah.
But wouldn't she go to prison?
That's like is that?
I mean, what happens? Like,
I mean,
what would
be the
next step?
If she were just a random schmo nobody who got convicted for these charges, yes, she would do prison time. But that's not how it works. You know, she's in Congress. People will step up. They will protect her. There will be plenty of people who refuse to believe that there's any legitimacy to these charges whatsoever and that it's a racist witch hunt just to get her because she's, you know, an outspoken Democratic woman of color. She will have a lot of money spent to defend her. She will have unlimited resources when it comes to defense, and defense attorneys can drag things out, file motions, you know, put it off. She'll probably win her next election. You know, it'll be years before this ever gets adjudicated in any sort of court, and then most people will have forgotten.
That's lame.
So what it really is going to come down to is, you know, do the Democrats in the House of Representatives decide to take some action? And they can impeach her. They can vote to impeach her. There's all sorts of things they can do. They can censure her. They can do all sorts of things. Will they? I don't know. I don't think so.
What age did she come to America? Do you remember?
I don't recall off the top of my head.
I will Google it.
Google it. Cause I have a comment to make with that. I think I know, but I don't want to speak out of turn. Yeah. There's a couple of tweets that I found just yesterday. This woman, Ilhan Omar, proposed sanctions against Israel, comparing it to Nazi Germany.
Right.
Yesterday.
After promising her Jewish constituents that she wouldn't.
Right. This is what she tweeted. She tweeted, "You may shoot me with your words, you may cut me with your eyes, you may kill me with your hatefulness, but still, like air, I'll rise." It's a quote from Maya Angelou.
Let's see here. After first arriving in New York in 1992, and she was born in 1982, so she's 10 years old.
Okay, so it was 10 or 11. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because you hear it, you don't hear it as much anymore, right? Because we've moved, the generations have moved on. But the trope when it came to Vietnam War vets, especially going back to films, was often the, you know, the war is over. Right. People that come back and, you know, I mean, oh my gosh, how many movies have been based off of that premise? Look at First Blood, you know, Rambo and, you know, coming back, suffering from PTSD. These guys that were so traumatized during the Vietnam War, they still carry this with them and all this. I do wonder, and I know this will never be a topic of discussion that anybody will get into, but when it comes to a person like Ilhan Omar, we've seen the interviews where she's talked about how she went to school for terrorism. I mean, she said that in an interview, talking about the teacher and how the teacher would say, yeah, yeah. There's a real famous, this is the one that people kind of latch onto. There's an interview she did with some Middle Eastern outlet. And in the interview, she talks about Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah, and she talks about how the teacher in her terrorism class would say Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah, and when he did, he would speak with authority because they wanted to make it, you know, sound like it was important and mean something. And it was in the context of, in the interview, it was in context of how they were criticizing when somebody commits an act of terrorism in the name of jihad, being a member of Al-Qaeda or ISIS, that we in America focus on the group and the organization and not the person. But yet when somebody goes and commits a mass murder on a school, we focus on the person and not anything else behind it, right? Somewhat insinuating that there's a larger thing at play,
right,
larger influence at play with the individuals, and really diminishing looking at the terrorist organization and aspect of it. But in that interview, she talks about being in this terrorism school when she was a kid. So my whole point of this whole thing is, I just wonder from her perspective if she was so traumatized growing up in Somalia around that community and around that mindset that she has just been unable. Like, in her mind, she's still an activist and at war, and now she's just at war with this different ideology here in America. And, you know, at an early age, from birth until 11 and arriving here, and who knows how many people were around her continuing to feed this to her, even at an early age arriving in the U.S., she's just a very angry, hateful person that I think is always going to be that way. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that she probably had some really traumatic experiences and was exposed to a lot of stuff that, you know, most kids don't get exposed to and shouldn't be exposed to.
It's entirely possible.
You know, and again, that's just all just,
I don't know. Maybe if she would grant some local media interviews, we'd learn more about that.
And if she would be grant a local
that's
media,
a great point.
She would grant a local media interview. And if she would just be genuine, just like have a legitimate conversation and just talk about it.
Yeah.
I think she is being genuine, though. That's the scary part. Right. I think when she goes out there and says these things, you know, I think she's there. I think she is. Unfortunately, she is showing a lot of how genuine she is in her beliefs, especially now that she feels like she can show her true feelings towards Israel and the BDS movement and things like that.
Well,
so,
with hashtag I stand with Ilhan being such a huge trending thing right now, I'm sure that she feels like she can say and do whatever she wants.
Yeah.
All right. I got to come back here for the beer cast. So,
okay.
Let me get out of here.
Okie dokie.
Hold on. There they are.
Morning daily promo.
I'll do blue, Drew.
I will do pink. Purple. It's not purple. Coming up on the Friday edition of Justice and Drew.
Sam's top five at 6:20, followed by the Friday roundtable.
Representative Nick Zerwas and Max Reimer join us at 7.
We'll get into the latest controversies around the squad, plus try to find out what's really going on in the DHS.
And play the news quiz at 8:35.
Justice and Drew, live and local, 6 to 9, Twin Cities News Talk. It didn't have an AM 11.
I know. You wanted like to keep going there.
It's like you hit a wall, but it's okay.
I just like ran face first into a wall. Did it sound weird?
No.
I was not ready for that.
It's fine.
17.5.
That works.
Twin Cities News Talk. I guess that if they hear this promo, they know what the signal is because they're listening to the station. It's fine.
Astute observation.
Rush Limbaugh. You're listening to Rush Limbaugh.
Friday morning on Justice and Drew, the latest on the squad versus Trump feud with the Friday Roundtable, plus the news quiz at 8:35.
Listen live, 6 to 9, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
That was like a roller coaster ride. It was fun.
Pags. You're listening to Joe Pags.
Friday morning on Justice and Drew, the latest on the squad versus Trump feud with the Friday Roundtable, plus the news quiz at 8:35.
Listen live 6 to 9 on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
argument. You're listening to Closing Argument with Walter Hudson.
And Friday morning on Justice and Drew, the latest on the Squad versus Trump feud with the Friday Roundtable. Plus, we'll play the news quiz at 8:35.
Listen live, 6 to 9, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.